Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
The views expressed here within the programs and chats do not necessarily represent the views of LiveParanormal.com.
You're listening to Live Paranormal Radio at liveparanormal.com. You are listening to Shriekfest Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Shriekfest Radio. This is Denise Gossett, the festival founder and director, and your hostess for the evening. Shriekfest is a horror, thriller, sci-fi, fantasy film festival, screenplay competition. We have a music video category, and it is October 5th through the 8th this year in Los Angeles, and October 21st in Orlando. Yes, you heard that right. We are now officially bi-coastal. So there will be two Shriekfest going on, the usual four-day event in Los Angeles and a one-day event to kick off the Orlando branch. Super excited about that because I consider Orlando kind of my hometown. So I've always wanted to bring it there, and today I jumped in full, or this year I jumped in full force to bring Shriekfest there. So I'm super excited, and hopefully all will go well. Our call for entries is closed. I know, there's many of you who keep emailing, but we are closed. We do have to wrap it up. So far we have gotten the screenplays down to semifinalists, and we are working on getting finalists picked, and of course the films, the shorts and the features. It's extremely difficult. I can't even tell you guys how great the quality is. For instance, there's about 200 short films in the yes pile. And we only take about 35. So going to be extremely difficult to pick these films, and it's going to be super heartbreaking when I have to tell all these great filmmakers that their film did not make the cut. And yeah, I cry about it every year. It's really, really hard for me, and I hope everyone out there understands that it's not because your film was bad. It's just there's not enough time. I mean, we'd have to do a festival every day of the month to get all these great films in. Anyway, our website, shriekfest.com, keep checking back because once we get the films picked, we're going to schedule up and all the trailers will be there and all that good stuff, and you guys can buy tickets. Right now you can buy passes for Shriekfest in L.A. and a day pass for Shriekfest Orlando. We are on Facebook and Twitter. Come give us a like and a follow. We'd appreciate that. Let's see, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter at our website. And, of course, we have Halloween 2 coming up. Shriekfest presents Halloween 2 with the New Art Theater in Los Angeles. It'll be at midnight. So Halloween 2 on 35mm, August 25th. And then October 13th, we are doing a return of the, wait, let me say this right, return of the, first let me find it in my calendar so I get everything correct, the Return of the Living Dead, and we're going to have some special guests there that night as well, and that will be at midnight on 35mm. So super excited about those, and of course, Shriekfest, October 5th through the 8th. Make sure you mark your calendars because you're going to want to come out. And if you did submit this year and you did not get in, or you find out you did not get in here shortly, please definitely come to the festival. Check it out. It's great networking. Everyone is lovely. It's like a big family, Shriekfest family, and people team up and they make projects, and it's always such a great time, fun parties. So definitely come check us out. Tonight's call-in number, if you have a question for myself or for my guest, is 347-202-0316. 347-202-0316. And tonight, my guest, who I cannot even believe, all these years I've known him and he's never been on Shriekfest Radio. How did this happen? I have Antonio Tiger Olivas. And in 2002, he had an official selection short film, Little Red Riding in the Hood, that was in the festival. And in 2004, he had a finalist screenplay. It was a Smallville script. And in 2016, he had a feature screenplay finalist, Maureen's Daydreams. And I'm super excited to welcome him to the show. Tiger, how are you?
Hello, I am here. Can you hear me all right?
Hi. Oh, it's so good to hear your voice. How are you?
This is such a surreal experience. I've never done anything like this, and I'm used to seeing you face to face, but just to hear you, it's just very surreal and very, very cool.
Well, we're going to have fun, so don't you worry. I'm going to take good care of you. I don't bite. Well, maybe yeah. Not. Maybe sometimes.
You always take such good care of everybody, and I just like to say that for Shriekfest, for me, it is really my annual mecca that I look forward to every year.
Thank you, Tiger.
Fantastic time and such great loving energy for all the scary stuff that we see on the screen. I find all the folks are really the most kind, loving, and just wonderful people to know and to collaborate with.
They really are. Everybody is just great. And you would think it would be the exact opposite with all the horror going on, but no, everybody's just so sweet.
Can I just say along those lines that I don't know what year it was, but I just wanted to say that I had the year that I think it was The Cellar Door was playing,
yeah,
with Michelle Tomlinson.
Yeah.
I don't remember what year that was, but I met her at that particular film festival, and I've known her since, and I found her such a wonderful, loving person, such a great energy,
yes,
that she exudes after having, you know, done this movie where she was locked up in a basement and she was crying and screaming in blood. I was so
right,
impressed with her. I've never had a chance to work with her, but I was just as a person, thought that she was just a great energy, and so she was actually the officiant at my wedding 1 year ago.
I did not know that. It was 2007 that The Cellar Door was in Shriekfest. So really,
okay,
how cool.
Yes, I convinced her to get ordained just so she could marry me.
Oh, I love it, Tiger. That is amazing.
A wonderful person.
Yes.
That,
you guys.
Shriekfest.
I'm sure it was beautiful and amazing.
Oh, it was. It was really nice.
I love
nice.
Michelle,
and I was thinking about who was this, the person who just is so positive all the time, and that we wanted this positive energy going into, you know, kind of like a non-traditional type of ceremony, because I'm obviously a non-traditional looking fellow, but also in my life. And so she was gracious enough to bless us that way.
Oh, that is wonderful.
There's a Shriekfest
I did not realize that. Wow, congratulations.
I guess you haven't heard that before. Yeah.
I have not. I have never heard that before. That's great. So can we say like Shriekfest got you married then?
Yes, you can. Yeah, yes, you can. Yes, go ahead. I'll give you that endorsement.
Shriekfest, we do it
together
all.
And getting them married. Though my
we
wife is
all.
Not into the genre, and she doesn't come to the festival. That's why I think I remember telling you about it. You were like, "Who is this person? I've never seen her." She's not.
Yep.
She's a school teacher and quite a lovely, normal person. I don't know what she's
I love
doing
it.
With me. It's one of those opposite attracts type of things.
Yes, and she loaned you to us for that whole 4 days, which is so kind.
Oh, yeah. Yes, she knows that I'm going to be gone for the whole weekend, and I'm going to sit in the theater all weekend and see every single movie, because that is
Yay.
Just how much better can it get than that for the season.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how you guys do it. You know, I watch them all year long, and you guys sit in there, and it's like when you come out of the theater, are your eyes like, oh, my gosh, the bright light, bright light.
Well, mostly it's the butt. It's like hurting. It's having sitting down for 3 days
right.
looking at that. Right. My eyes could take it. It's the butt that's lit. But the Raleigh Theater is quite a nice facility, so it's not that. It's just sitting down for such a long time.
Sure, exactly. Yeah, I don't know how you guys do it. I always worry about you guys back there and watching horror after horror after horror. Although I guess I kind of do that.
Well, we got the easy part because we're sitting there watching, and you have the hard part of, as you said, to find all of these, go through all these wonderful entries.
Oh my gosh, Tiger, it's insane. And it's
getting
worse every year.
I've only done it a little tiny bit. Oh well, you say that every year, but then now you're doing it two festivals, so you can say that, but now you're doing another festival.
I know what's wrong with me.
Well, it's all this passion that you have for the genre, and that's great for all of us fans.
Yeah, and you've done a few film festivals as well, so you know the amount of work that goes in.
That's why I could not do it. I participated in a few Latino film festivals. I'm very much into trying to meld that audience with genre stuff, so I guess I could touch on it a little bit later, but I did a couple of little film festivals and curated some festivals and trying to bring that content in. And it is such a tremendous amount of work, and that's on a small scale, so I can't even imagine how. I think you really do have a clone of yourself somewhere where you're doing all these things.
Gosh, I wish. I really wish. You know, it's funny because I was talking to Annette, who's one of my helpers, and she was saying, if we could just clone you like 11 times, because I have so many ideas I would love to do for Shriekfest, and it's just too hard, not having enough time. But it's all good.
Thank you for having me in this great opportunity.
Oh, I'm super excited because I'm going to finally, you know, I know you and I've known you a long time and I adore you and I can't wait to find out more about you. So, Tiger, where were you born?
Yes.
Where'd you grow up?
I don't know if you know that, remember that Cheech Marin movie, you know, Cheech from Cheech and Chong?
Yeah.
He did a movie called Born in East L.A.?
Yes.
Well, that's like my biography movie.
I love it.
Born in East L.A., just like the song. It was a song, and then it was a movie. But that was me.
Yep.
I was born in East L.A. in Boyle Heights. That's where I grew up, the oldest of a large family. And that's where.
How big of a family?
Roots there now. Well, I was the oldest child, and I had four brothers and a sister.
Wow.
And then, of course, all the cousins and the extended family. So we had quite a big, but, you know, nobody's got this craziness that I have in trying to work in this industry, in this town, in this genre stuff.
You're the only one, huh?
I'm the only one who was bitten by the bug, as it is.
Wow. That's amazing, really, because especially living in L.A., a lot of people get bitten just because they're there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, in East Los Angeles, there wasn't a lot when I was growing up back then. There wasn't a lot of programs or schools or anything like that. And I wish they were back then I think I'd be much further along in my career than I am now. And I think a lot of the stuff that I might touch on as I riff on the things that I've done comes from that there was no real training or motivation or anybody telling you that you could work in this industry, in this genre. And I say genre a lot because I consider myself a genre filmmaker. And, you know, genre encompasses many things. In horror, there's a lot of sub-genres. But I like to, as a writer, I like to work in a lot of different dramas. So I've done other things besides horror. But I always come back to the things, my personal passions always seem to come back to the scary.
Yes, 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 yes. And you've done quite a bit of things, which we're going to talk about. So you mentioned, you know, back then there wasn't a whole lot of opportunities or people telling you, like, you can do this for a living sort of thing. So how did you get started?
Well, I think it goes back when I was growing up. You know, I was one of those kids who watched all these Universal horror movies on the weekend,
yeah.
The Godzilla monster movies. My father's really the one who introduced me to a lot of other aspects of movies, like Westerns and classic Hollywood films. He said there's more, you know, different types of movies that I didn't think of. I was only watching this, the sci-fi horror stuff. But I was introduced to that by my father, who liked those type of things. But as I said, there was never any thought of, like, well, that would be a career that you could pursue, trying to make those type of things. But I was always, quote-unquote, literature inclined, in that I was reading newspapers at a young age, and in junior high school and high school, I was the editor, and a reporter and editor on my junior high school and high school newspapers. So I was always writing and making up stories. I was terrible at math, but I was good in writing, so it must be that left brain, right brain type of thing. But so I was always interested in those type of things, and being the eldest in the family, I was expected to do something responsible, so I was kind of leaning towards a career in journalism, and that's something that I was going to pursue. But when I was going to graduate from high school, there was this, something that was nagging at me. I had also done some things in the drama club, some plays, and miraculously, when it was time to graduate from high school, I was accepted into the theater arts program at UCLA. So I kind of jumped at that opportunity, thinking, well, I could try this out, and if it doesn't work out, I could always go back to journalism.
And?
So I went to UCLA. I left the east side, went to the west side. It was quite a culture shock. And I was at the school, and it was like the TV show Fame. People were dancing and singing in the courtyard and doing plays and in the sculpture garden and Shakespeare. And I was like, wow, this is really terrific. But when I got there, I found that, you know, I should leave the acting to the talented people because there's such a great talent there. And I knew I wanted to be creative, and I thought it was wanting to be an actor. But I think having just that little background of studied theater helps me in my writing and my directing, you know, working with actors, because I know their process and, you know, what their training is and all that. But I think I just didn't like the idea of, I don't know how actors do it, going to auditions continuously and say, like me, what I'm doing. And
right.
I didn't want to do that. I wanted to say, here's what I'm doing, not, you know, like me. And I wanted to be more in control of my destiny. But again, didn't really know how to do that. So I was kind of lost, and I left school, got married, joined the Army.
Oh.
I lived in Hawaii for several years.
Oh, wow.
And, so I was overseas, and it's not a very bad duty station, let me tell you. If you're going to be anywhere, Hawaii is not a bad place to be.
Right. It's beautiful.
And it's gorgeous. But, of course, you know, being in the military, there's really not a whole lot of time to really enjoy it. It's a very intense thing, and it's not really a conducive a job for a creative person such as myself, because they're very strict and they don't have any sense of humor in the Army.
Mm.
So it was kind of tough, but I think when I got out of there, I was just like busting out of all this constriction and just wanted to be incredibly creative and expressive, and that kind of translated a lot to the tattoos that I have. I have a lot of tattoos. Those folks who don't know me, you know, quite a bit, including on my face, and people always ask me, well, you know, what's that about? You know, what does that mean? And I liken it to the influence that I had when I was in the islands. They were a combination of Hawaiian tribal and Native American tribal, because I felt like this philosophy that I got having lived there is that we're all children under the sun, so we're all Ohana, we're all family. So
sure.
That's kind of where that comes from, that type of thing. But I just wanted to express myself creatively. And once I got out of the Army and I came back, I went back to East LA, but I still didn't know how to pursue the goals that I wanted to. I knew I wanted to get back into writing. And so I just sat down and wrote my first script. And back then, I didn't have a computer. I had a typewriter.
Right.
I had a script. I don't know what script it was, but I had a movie script that I bought in over at Hollywood Boulevard, and I actually used a ruler to measure the spacing.
Oh my
I didn't
God.
Have final draft. I didn't have anything like that. So I measured
sure.
with a ruler the spacing between the dialogue and the action, and try to measure it how it would be on the typewriter, and just try to copy
That's
it like
awesome.
That. And banged it out on the old-fashioned way on the keys. But I didn't know what I was doing, so I wrote this huge epic, and it was called Vampire Cop.
Oh.
I'm sure you could deduce what it's about
yeah.
from the title.
It sounds
but,
good,
actually.
Do you still have it?
I'm sure it's there in the dusty pile somewhere. But I was, again, I had a script, but I didn't know what to do about it, so... I was East Los Angeles College. I think I was taking some courses there, and I saw a flyer for a campus film group that they wanted to make some movies. And so I went to that, and they were a bunch of like-minded folks who just were helping each other make these little movies. And of course, my movie was just too huge, so we wound up making like a trailer for the movie Vampire Cop. And that was largely a learning effort. But if I could backtrack just a minute, I just recollect that my whole thought process, like the whole learning process of where I thought it's finally possible to make movies, going back to junior high school, there was a teacher who had an after-school film club.
Oh, wow.
He taught kids how to make films on Super 8mm film.
Oh, nice.
And so that is where we made a bunch of little films, and that I saw that it was possible that you could actually make movies. And so that's where I started off, learning how to make movies. And then at the East LA College with this film group, sort of making little movies again, it kind of came full circle to try to start the career of writing and directing, which has been largely just self-taught, just by doing it.
The best way.
Sure. And then, but the takeaway from that little film group was, and I think that's the takeaway from, I would say, my career such as it is thus far, is that the networking, how important that is, and connecting with folks. And from that little group at East LA College, collaborated with a fellow who we worked on a lot of other little films, all unwatchable learning efforts. but he happened to know his friend, his father, was on the original Mission Impossible TV series.
Oh, wow.
He was one of the actors on that show, and they wanted to make a movie for the father and the cast, like a reunion movie. And so I wrote a script for them. There was a reunion movie for the Mission Impossible cast. And while they were trying to get the financing for that movie, they decided to make a horror film, and they paid me to write that horror film, which eventually became my first feature, which was called Curse of the 49er, later renamed Miner's Massacre.
Yes, yes, and I've seen that movie, and it's great. You did a great job.
Oh, thank you very much. That was actually a very good dream learning experience for me, because we had a great genre director. He was a special effects master turned filmmaker, Jean-Carl Beekler, who's worked on every franchise there is behind the camera, making, like, you know, the Friday the 13th and the Nightmare on Elm Street and all of those movies he's worked on.
Wow.
And so he really knew what he was doing. So what a great person to learn the ropes with on a first feature film. And it had a great genre cast in it. You know, Karen Black, John Philip Law, and Richard Lynch, who's made a career of these being a bad guy in all these movies. And I must say, as a little thing, it was great meeting him, because he gave me nightmares in a movie that I saw when I was a kid called The Sword and the Sorcerer. And he was an evil king in that movie. And it really stuck with me. And he had this, like, he was a king and he had this goatee. And I actually have my goatee now that I have because I was influenced by watching him in that movie that I still wear today. And so it was just really cool to meet him and to hear him saying words that I wrote, and then seeing the efforts on the big screen is what I was just really hooked and knew I had come to my calling.
Wow. And okay, so did you write it and then they purchased it, or they hired you to write it?
They hired me to write the movie.
That is awesome.
They had a location, but they didn't have a story. So they were filming. They wanted to film up at Sable Ranch in Valencia, where they shoot lots of movies. And so we toured the area, and it was like an old ghost town and old mine shafts and things like that. And so I came up with this concept of this evil miner from the gold rush days who was stealing everybody's gold, and he cursed anybody who would take his gold, and they killed him, and he comes back as an evil spirit when, of course, the dumb teenagers go up into the woods
right.
to find his gold. He comes back to life, and he's chasing the teenagers throughout the forest and killing them, you know, kind of like a Scooby-Doo type of thing. But at the end, it wasn't, you know, like somebody who was trying to chase everybody away so that they could get the gold mine for themselves. It was like, I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you teenagers and your dog. It wasn't like that. You know, it was like, you know, a horror film, and, you know, at the end.
Right.
Hopefully, but I was hoping that would be a franchise type of movie. That's what I was setting it up. It was called The Curse of the 49er, and the 49er character was supposed to be this franchise character. You could have Revenge of the 49er, Return of the 49er, that type of thing.
Yeah, but now that would have been amazing. How come they didn't do that?
The distributors changed. I don't know. The distributors changed the title. They thought that people would get mixed up with the 49er football team. And so somebody came up with the idea to change it to Miners Massacre. And they sold it off to, I don't know who they sold it off to. And so they didn't have the rights to it anymore. And so the director wanted to do some more scripts, and we talked about it, but it was not to be because, I don't know, rights issues, which happens with so many of these type of things.
Right. Now, okay, so they hire you, and during the shoot, were they asking for rewrites of things, or how did the whole shoot go?
No, it was actually, we were getting ready to shoot, and we were up there, and I forget whatever reasons it was, there was some extensive rewrites that needed to be done, and so I was in the trailer, stayed overnight, doing all these rewrites and giving people blue pages in the morning, and they were giving me dirty looks because so many things had changed in the script. And I was like, well, I'm just the writer, and that's what they tell me to do, and for
right.
whatever budget reasons. And that was actually had some things had to change because actually, you know, Karen Black had some issues with the script and the character, that he was a kind of a cannibal, and I think she was a vegetarian, and she didn't like that portrayal, and she called me in, and we had to a meeting in her trailer, and then I went to the director and the producer, and I said, well, she liked all these ideas, changed, and what do we want me to do? And they said, well, write them then. And so I had to kind of tone down the script to what it originally was.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, so those things happen, you know, the budgetary things or actor concerns. You know, if you're the writer, you have to kind of go with the flow, and then a guest star would come on, and we had to write a scene for a guest star to come on who did a, you know, one-day bit, and they needed to beef this up or tone this down. So that was a really good learning experience for me and they were very collaborative and open to everything, and I was on the set every day, and a couple of my other movies has not been that way, where I turned in the script, and then I was like, all right, thanks, see ya, and they didn't call me to the set, they didn't want my input, they had it, and they ran with it, so that's why I say this first experience kind of spoiled me, because I thought that's the way it was going to be
sure.
in all my movies, but
yeah, you know, most writers are not, they don't even want them on the set.
Yeah, a lot of times they don't. But again, these were folks that I knew, and so
yeah,
it was
that's
really
great.
Good in terms of that, so that I was there. And I made a lot of good relationships with some of the actors who had gone on to work with me on several other projects, because I saw that they were good, solid performers, and I would, you know, ask them to do things for me in other short films, and then I would do things for them.
Sure.
So, you know, I still have some friends today from that very first movie.
That's nice. That's really nice. Now, you have directed as well. what do you prefer? Do you prefer writing or do you prefer directing?
Oh, that's a good question, because I guess writing, because that's what I the bulk of my pursuits are writing, but it's all towards the end of directing. So I'm hoping that having write things that people will hire me to direct things, and you know, once I get in good with them. And so I'm trying to build up a bit of a calling card, a resume of work that I can parlay. I'm still trying to do that, and I'm hoping to parlay about these half dozen shorts that I've done into some directing gigs. And I just did something, maybe I'll talk about it at the very end or not, but I just wrote and directed a short for another contest thing. So sometimes, you know, I'm doing these things for contests and sending them out and trying to get some recognition that way.
Sure, nice.
Yeah.
Well,
so
I think it's great.
I love writing, and I think, yeah, directing is probably the end. Because I love when I directed again, I was just like stepping right back into it, and I love, you know, working with the actors, but I really like creating the material. So I'm like the creative side. I really don't like the other side where it's like producing and the technical side where you're, you know, the camera or the editing. You know, I like to leave that to those other folks who that's their forte. I'm not like Robert Rodriguez where I have to do everything and, you know, put people out of work. I want to give people work. I want them to
right.
do what, you know, what they want to do. You know, the people, the cinematographer, the wardrobe person, you know, that's their forte. So I leave that up to them, and we all collaborate. And so far, the little things that I've done, but we're trying to move on up the ladder.
Well, I, you know, knowing you, you're very social and you're great with people. There are a lot of writers I know that would just rather sit in their office by themselves, mm-hmm. type away, mm-hmm. turn it in, and never be involved again, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but maybe they're not interested in directing, you know?
You know, they're not. That's why
work.
I know your end goal is directing, because of just
mm-hmm.
who you are.
Oh,
it's,
yeah, because I love
your
working
thing.
I love collaborating with talented folks, and if you can do it with your own material, that's even better. But I've done some theater workshops where I've directed, you know, other people's material, and that's just to get the experience directing actors, you know, for the stage. But largely, you know, my focus. But I have recently, in the last maybe 5 years or so, have been directing a lot of my writing training. My only formal writing training has been in the television area, where I've been in a couple of writing programs.
Yeah.
Specifically for television writing. I was in a program of the National Hispanic Media Coalition, Latino group. They had a TV writers program for Latinos that I went through, and I wrote some TV spec scripts and TV pilots. And last year I completed a TV writers program for the Writers Guild Foundation for veterans, had a TV writers program. That was a year-long program.
Whoa, how was that?
It's an invaluable experience, because they bring in all these working writers from television, writers, producers, as they are in TV, to come in and mentor you, and you workshop your ideas and your material. And I've made some great relationships with those folks, and they've given me some awesome feedback. And the end goal of those things are to try to get some representation so that you get, you know, staffed on television shows, that sort of thing. But to me, it's always about genre. I want to be on a genre show. Put me in a sci-fi show. Put me on a horror
show.
You know, that would be my preference. Of course, at this point, you know, I'll do animation for My Little Pony. I'll write for that if they want me to. Just to get my foot in the door.
Yeah,
television stuff. Yeah, I've been trying to do, but it's always about the genre, the pilots. Like all the shows that I write for are genre stuff. I did, you know, back in the day, I did X-Files and you know, Supernatural, Sleepy Hollow,
Smallville,
Grimm, Smallville, exactly. That's I always love the genre stuff, and so I'm always gonna gravitate towards that material.
And have you ever been able to get that script to that show into the right hands?
The way that works is that the shows that you want to write for would not, more than likely, won't read a script for that show.
Okay.
And they already know how to write that show. But if I write a Sleepy Hollow, I want to get on a show that is like that, which is a, you know, like a supernatural procedural. You know, it's the monster of the week.
Sure.
Like Supernatural. So those type of shows. And right now is a great time. It really is a golden age for genre television because there's so much great genre TV on so many different kinds of platforms that, you know, I'm hoping to get a staff job on one of those shows.
But
that's just showing the type of material that I like, but I'm trying to bring my voice to it. So that's how it was. I mean, of course, Grimm's been canceled. Sleepy Hollow's been canceled.
I know.
Supernatural's on its way out, I think, is the last season. But they would be samples for me to try to get on a different kind of show like those shows. Because those are my favorite shows, so that's why I write those shows.
Ah. I've always wondered how that worked because, yeah, they've already got their writer. So it's basically to use to get on a show similar.
Exactly, yes. Not that particular show. If you want to get on that kind of a show, you would write something that would be similar, but not that particular show, because then they could see that you have, you know, similar tendencies, but you're not writing that show.
Right, right. That makes sense.
And
now, do you feel like...
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, I think that the whole takeaway from that and all these other things that I've done is like, when you get onto all these programs or you go to all these festivals, it's like it's networking and meeting up with like-minded people, and then you start to do projects together. So coming out of that veteran writing program, you know, I gelled with a couple of folks and we collaborated on some things, and I wrote a short for a 48-hour film festival that this young lady, she directed the script, and it went to festival and, you know, won some awards. And we collaborated on a feature film script as well. And also from that Veterans Writers Program, we just did a horror short not too long ago for the Annabelle Creation TV contest.
Oh, tell me about that.
Yeah, Annabelle Creation comes out of the Conjuring franchise, so it's one of the spin-off movies about the possessed doll, and so it's got its own movie, and they had a contest to promote that movie, Annabelle Creation. It came out on the 11th, I believe, this month, and we had to, and they were accepting submissions for a two-minute short, so you had to create a two-minute short and turn it in, and we only had weeks to prepare and put everything together, so it was kind of a rush job to do that, but I wrote and directed an entry for that particular contest called The Case of Doreen Hackett. That's what it was called, and it's up on the website. And but they haven't announced the results yet, so we were hoping to hear by now. But that was like a recent effort where I wrote something and directed something and collaborated with somebody who I met out of one of these programs.
Wow. Now, when you were doing that, and it's in such a quick timeline, was it stressful or was it, like, exhilarating?
For me, I hadn't directed something in a few years, so the preparation part is a lot of rushing around, but I was not concerned about doing the directing at all. You know, I was just like riding a bike once I stepped on the set and met with everybody, and we just worked it out, and it was like just coming back to something that was very natural and fun to do. But, yeah, the prepping is a lot of rushing around. And when you don't have a lot of budget, you don't have a lot of time, you know, those are factors that can affect your end product.
Right.
But, you know, it was a thing to do. And there were a couple of good relationships that came out of that particular thing. You know, the makeup, special effects makeup lady who did that, Marcy Saylor, who I met at film festival, did a fantastic job on this, you know, horrible possession makeup that we had, and I think it's a real thing that sold it, and, you know. And so it comes out of these relationships. You're meeting folks and coming on, and I know we'll work together again on other projects. But it was just, so that's what the takeaway is when you do these projects. You have something that you could show, and hopefully everybody will be very happy and proud of, and hopefully we could get some recognition out of it. But I think the takeaway is just the relationships that you could work on in future projects.
That is great. Well, cool. Hopefully they will pick you guys. I'm excited to hear.
Yeah, Well, we shall see. They haven't announced what was going on with that particular contest as of yet, but that was just like the most recent thing that I did, and it was good to jump back into, you know, I do writing all the time, but the directing was just really good. It felt really good to get back to.
Yay. Keep doing it. You're really good.
Yeah, so I don't know how you want to do this. I mean, I've done like 6 movies that have been produced and released. You know, most of them were horror, 4 of them were horror. One was a Western, and one was more like a sci-fi action-y type of script. So in terms of like, you know, I like to write different genres, and I've written for lots of different producers a lot of material, but they just never got any funding. So I've been an assignment writer for various producers and production companies, giving them the material, but it's really tough to find the finance for these projects. So thus far, only those ones have been made, those particular 6.
Really, if you think about that, that's a lot. Now, let me ask you so you've written all these scripts and someone else is directing them. Mm-hmm. Is there ever a point where you're like, oh, that's not really how I saw that scene?
Not particularly. I try to take my directing self out of it. And
oh,
I just go
good.
Back to my writer self about like, I wrote it this way, but they did a different thing with it, and for whatever reason, that's fine. Being a filmmaker, I understand how the process works, so I don't take it personal when
that's good.
They don't use everything that I write or the intention that I had for I wanted it to go, because once I hand it off, it becomes part of the domain of the writer, I mean the directors and the producers, and they have to take their, you know, talent to it and do it what they will. So it's, you know, all part of the team process, you know, of creating things. But in terms of like what came out of my first movie, The Miners Massacre, is I wrote it as a multicultural cast.
Sure.
And I show up the first day on the set and all the actors were Caucasian. They were, and I was like, and I would meet somebody who was like, yeah, I'm supposed to be the black guy. And like, yeah, I'm supposed to be the Asian girl. And
yeah,
I went to the
weird.
Producers and I said, because I wasn't involved in the casting process. I just turned in the script
right.
And then I showed up to the set and I expected to see the multicultural cast. And then they said, well, you know, we decided to go this direction for it because of they thought it would hurt the distribution of the movie if they had multi-ethnic characters. And I was completely floored by that. I didn't understand that logic at all.
Yeah, that's
and
weird.
So that was kind of a learning experience. That was their perspective on it. And so it just had to be what it was. But the direct result of that was that one of my next movies, Fright Club, Fright Club.
Yes, Fright Club.
I created that as a multi-ethnic genre piece in that it was like a throwback to the old Universal anthology stories. You know, I wanted to do the classic werewolf, Frankenstein, vampire archetypes, but I wanted to give the multi-ethnic spin and characters and stories to them. So that's
okay.
How I wrote it. And so it was, the conceit was these characters go to a fright club where they have to tell these scary stories. And so I started off as a short, and I could only afford to do a short. So I did a 16 millimeter. We shot on a film, 16 millimeter. And it was the Latino werewolf story, Little Red Riding in the Hood.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to do film and I wanted to do prosthetic makeup. And so I had this short, and then I went to the AFM, the American Film Market, and there I approached the head of a company who was speaking there. He was he had a company, Maverick Entertainment, out of Florida, and they're a distribution company, and they're a distribution company of urban material, so they get all the urban, you know, action type of movies. But and I had a trailer for the film, I think on VHS tape. This was back then. I had a VHS tape,
of course,
trailer. To show them and the script, and I said, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to do these 2 other stories and the wraparound. And they, at that time, they were going to launch their urban horror line called Creep Effects. So the timing worked really well. They wanted to do some business. They gave me a small budget so that we could do 2 other shorts and a wraparound to make it into a feature film. But I told them that, you know, I wanted to give opportunities to some other filmmakers. I could have done the whole thing myself, but I said, find an African-American filmmaker to do the black vampire story. Find an Asian director to do the Asian Frankenstein story. I already did the Latino werewolf story.
Right.
And I'll do the wraparound. And so they did find these other filmmakers, and they got a chance to do a short film and got put together, and that's how we made a feature film, three shorts and a wraparound.
And that's really sweet of you to do that.
Yeah, well, I would like to give back, as it were, and give some opportunities like I had hoped somebody would do for me. And as you may recall, that particular film, Denise, as you were in the wraparound segment, which was really great because we got to finally work together.
I know, and we had a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it was, what it was due to whatever things, as I said, the budgets and the times and the way these things work out. But it was a film that got made. But the whole point was I wanted to do something that would showcase diversity in the genre.
Sure.
And that's something that I'm very passionate about. And that's why I tried to do a little horror festival called Fear Fiesta to highlight the Latino contribution to the genre. We did that for a couple of years. This was a Halloween time short film festival. There was another Latino film festival called Real Rascuache Film Festival that started out of East Los Angeles College. Not East Los Angeles College. It was in Eastside, and they did a film festival, but I did some programming for them, and I brought in, because I know there's a lot of talented Latino folks out there with their genre material, and so I would know them, and I would bring them in and curate these programs for them. So I know it's a lot of work, but it's kind of a passion for mine to try to bring that inclusivity to the genre.
That's great. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people love you for doing that too, because there's not a whole lot of that going on. And so I think it's great that you have reached out to people and brought some recognition to them as well.
Yeah, well, I've done a lot of work over the years with the Latino independent entertainment community. There's a lot of organizations that advocate to get more representation in film and television, and I've been lucky enough to work with a lot of these programs, and so I see a lot of these talented people who are eager to work in this genre, and so I love knowing them and trying to help them out.
Talk to me about Maureen's Daydreams. Finalist last year at Shriekfest. Great, great script. What inspired you?
What inspired me is that it's really based on one of the classic films that I saw growing up, thanks to my father. It was a Danny Kaye film called The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Yes.
So I love Danny Kaye films, and that was a great one where he was kind of a timid guy who was put upon by his family and his people at work, and he would escape all the daily pressures through his daydreams, and so we would all have all these little vignettes where he was Danny Kaye, so he was singing and dancing, but he would be a cowboy, or he'd be a World War II fighter pilot, or something like that, and he'd be singing and dancing. But he was in all these daydreams. I just love that setup, and I thought that would be good for a modern retelling of that. But with I wanted to do it with a female as the lead character and try to tell it from that kind of perspective, without singing and dancing, but more updated. And so Maureen is kind of put upon by her family and her people at work, and she escapes from her daily pressures by going into her daydreams. But it's inside her daydreams that she gets the strength to deal with her real-life problems through her daydreams. So I just thought that was a nice setup that could be adapted. And so I just did that one because it was just a story that was, again, one of those things that was always gnawing at me, to do. And so I always wanted to, always want to have an entry in your festival every year. And I'm always upset when I leave the festival because I'm like, I wanted to be in the festival. I got to get off my butt or actually put my butt in the chair and finally write something that I can submit.
Right.
So that's where that came from. And it's just a story that I wanted to tell. It was influenced by these wonderful vintage films that I had seen.
That is great. All because of your dad.
Yes. It all comes full circle.
Yeah. Do you feel like you have to write...
Make that money. I do. I'm not one of those people who says, you know, they say, oh, you have to be writing. If you're a writer, you need to write every day. If you're a painter, you need to paint every day. It's like, no, I write a lot. When I sit down, I write a lot. You know, I don't write every day because I'm running around doing a bunch of stuff. But, you know, when I do sit down, it's like I'm in my cave and it's like I'm hibernating. I come out till winter when the thing's done.
You're like, I need food and water, but I'm going right back in.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And for that reason, you know, it is like, you know, kind of like a solitary, but you do have to get out, you know, and network and go to events, go to seminars, go to film festivals and meet people and get out and make some connections. And that's what I love doing. You know, I'm quite busy in the cave a lot of the time, so that's the only way I could get this stuff done. But my writing process is once I get a project, it's like I like to obsess over it and mull over it and just have it boiling in my brain until I have to finally just throw it up on the page, and then I just go at it and just let it all come out of me. So that's kind of how the writing process goes. Sometimes it won't avail you if you have a short deadline. That's not going to work. But, you know, if you have a little bit of time, then, you know, I like to absorb all of the material and hear the voices in my head of the characters and think about, and you know, I'm always obsessed about things until I'm like sitting down and writing, and then I just all spill it out on the page.
Do you ever get blocked, and what do you do if you do get blocked?
If I do get blocked, I probably just go on to something else because there's always something else to write. There was one time when I was doing two scripts at the same time, and one was a horror film and one was a Christmas script, and a family Christmas story, and I was one day I would write the Christmas script, and the other day I would write the horror story, and in my mind it would get all mixed up, and so then it was like a horror Christmas script, or, you know, and I didn't know what
I
was.
Your family Christmas movie became, you're like, crap, how'd that get in there?
Yeah, it was like sort of mixing them up, so, but yeah, I try not to do that, because then that happens, and, you know, but so it's like there's always something to be doing, there's always a feature to write, there's always a TV episode to write, and if I get stuck on something, I might just take a break and work on something else and then come back to it.
And how does your lovely wife handle when you disappear into your cave to write for days on end?
Oh,
she understands.
I can tell you, I'm so blessed. Yes, I have such an understanding wife. I mean, we've known each other for over 20 years. We go all the way back to college. We actually met at college. The first day of college was when we actually met.
You're
kidding. So she's my college sweetheart.
Well, so wait a minute. Were you guys dating this whole time, or did you kind of lose track of each other for a while?
No, we were dating, and then up until the time I left school, and then I was in the Army, and then after I came back out of the Army, then we got back together. And,
You're kidding.
And she's just... No, and so but she finally, you know, put her foot down. It's like, oh, we have to get married here. We don't know each other all these years. So we just reached our 1-year anniversary. But
I know.
No,
happy anniversary.
Because she's so thank you. She's so supportive of me, and she understands. And I just spent 3 weeks straight working on a comic book to film adaption script, and she was so wonderful and understanding about it, because she knew that I was just going to be writing all the time. And but she's a school teacher, so she understands that work ethic. You know, when she's with the children, she comes home, she has to prepare all of her lessons, and she's very focused on her career as well, and she's really good about it. I say, I'm going to the horror convention. She says, all right, good, have a good time. I'm going to the film festival. I'm going to be gone for 3 days. All right. I think she's glad to get rid of me.
I have got to meet her. I cannot believe you guys have been together that long. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think she loves it when this time of year rolls around. It's like, oh, yes, he's going to be gone at convention and film festival.
No, I
so
seriously
she's really
doubt it. Why
understanding.
Would you? Oh, that's great.
Very blessed, very blessed.
Yeah, that's great.
And it's really good, you know, to have this kind of support to be able to pursue all of these things is just a real blessing.
Yeah, because can you imagine if she wasn't supportive? Then you have that added stress onto an already stressful career.
Yes, entirely. Yes, absolutely. And I don't know what I would do without her. I'm glad I don't have to find out. We just made our 365-day anniversary, so I hope... She hasn't got rid of me yet.
All right. So can you believe it? We're almost out of time. But before we run out of time, I want to make sure, where can people find you? Do you have websites? Where can people see some of these films that you've written?
That's a good one. People ask me about the films all the time. And since they were done for various folks, various companies throughout the years, you know, there's people have said that they were on Amazon or Hulu, but not the free one, the Prime. Like, you have to order.
But they're out there.
Them,
just do some searching.
They're out there. Yes, they're out there. As far as the films go, I have a website, tigertorres.com. Tiger Torres being my writing name, my pen name, that I picked out for myself, because I thought it was more groovy and genre-centric.
I love it.
So,
and you're on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter, but not, like, a lot. It's, I think, at Mr. Tiger, I think, and Facebook, primarily. Facebook, you could just Antonio Tiger Olivas on Facebook. And that's where people could find me on the web type of thing.
Okay. Oh, and I just realized almost all of your films from your scripts are on Amazon Video. And actually, if people go to IMDb, you can watch it right from there. There's revamps on there, Fright Club, Brothers in Arms, and Curse of the 49er.
Wow, good to know. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah. Yeah, so that is great. So, guys, check out his stuff. See what he's written. And thank you so much for coming on, Tiger. It was so great learning more about you.
Thank you for having me. It was a wonderful experience, and thank you so much for all the great work that you do. I tell you every year, you're the saint of the film festival circuit for us. You know, you bless us with all your hard work and your talent, and so appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot to me, especially in these days, because it's starting to get very, very busy for me, and I start to go, does anybody even care? Why am I doing all this? So I really appreciate it.
Well, you're just wonderful, and I just thank you so much for everything that you do, and thank you for having me. It was just a great pleasure.
Absolutely. And keep me posted on the case of Doreen Hackett, because if it doesn't get accepted, I'd love to see it. So maybe you can post it. It'd be fun to post it on the Shriekfest Facebook page and people can see it too.
Oh, very good. Thank you. So as soon as we find out what happens to it, I'll be sure to let you know. We're still waiting to hear about it, but it's always onward and upward, out to the next project.
That is true, and keep writing, my friend, and I'm going to see you very, very soon. So thanks again, Tiger.
You know I'll be there for the whole weekend.
Yes. And tell your lovely wife I said hello, and thank you again for coming on.
Thank you, Denise.
All right, you have a great night.
You too, love.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, guys, so go to IMDb and check out his movies. I've seen several of them, and they're great. He really is a great writer and director. And so keep an eye out for him. And like he said, he's on Facebook. Go say hello. He's absolutely wonderful, very open to meeting people. And come by the festival, and you'll meet him because he's always there. He's great to have around. All right, guys, keep pursuing those dreams. Write down those goals, do baby steps every day to get to them, and before you know it, you will get to them. All right, guys, see you back here next week, and have a great one.
You are listening to Shriekfest Radio.
You're listening to Life Paranormal Radio at lifeparanormal.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.